got into Princeton, they sent me a postcard. In Princeton's iconic trademarked font were the words, "Aim high, be bold." At the time, I envisioned those words leading me far, far away from Ohio. Years later, fulfilling those words led me back to Toledo, my home. On campus at Princeton, students walk with a lightness in their steps. Within weeks of freshman fall, people were already discussing their summer plans. Some were interviewing for the next round of coveted consulting internships. Others were sending in project budgets to departments for their independent projects. Before the first leaves of fall dropped, the atmosphere of students reaching for the farthest, bestest, highest experiences pervaded the campus. The first summer, I went abroad to complete a prestigious Princeton language learning program. Foreign travel, check. But for my second summer, as life would have it, I somehow found myself interning not in DC or New York or overseas, but at a law firm in downtown Toledo. "What are you doing this summer again?" friends asked. "I'm going home," I said. Seemingly, I was going somewhere familiar. But in reality, growing up in Northwest Ohio, I had very little experience of downtown. 8:35 a.m. on my first day, I drove down Madison Ave. Parking was ample. I met with my supervisor and boss, was shown my desk, and began my fairly slow summer in Toledo. After a celebratory welcome lunch with the team, I took a quick walk around Promenade Park. Prometicus moved downtown, the steam plant, the changes that ensued hadn't quite happened yet. So on that sunny afternoon, I stood under an expansive sky on a gray concrete walkway, leaning on the railings and gazing across the Maumee as the waters rushed by. That was more than a decade ago, and for sure, many infrastructural changes have been made. New brick and mortar shops, new restaurants, and new amenities have made their homes not only downtown, but also across the river. Downtown has changed, and so have I. And I'm not just in Toledo for a summer. I'm here for good. That little orange postcard remains propped up against a picture frame in my parents' home. "Aim high, be bold," it still says in its regal font. Once, aiming high and being bold meant leaving Toledo and experiencing life elsewhere. Today, it means believing that Toledo can be so much more than what we may currently even see, and that it needs those with vision and boldness. On a day like today, I could probably do the same drive downtown, find that same quiet spot, and experience a very similar Toledo as I had before. Some things may have changed, but a lot hasn't. I won't pretend we don't have a ways to go, but we're building something here, and I'm grateful I can be part of that. Welcome to the Midstory Hour, a show produced by Midstory in collaboration with WGTE. I'm your host, Samuel Chang. Here at Midstory, we believe in the power of storytelling, especially about the places we call home. We've covered thousands of stories from across all 12 Midwest states, and each week on the Midstory Hour, we will share a few with you. Tune in every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. to learn something new about the place you call home, and likewise, learn something new about places you've never been. This week, listen to the sixth episode of Midstory's brand new podcast, Brain Drain, to take a deep dive into the difficult and complex decision to leave home, or likewise, to stay. Next up is a story of a derelict school building turned high-tech manufacturing showcase just outside of Cleveland's downtown, whose transformation echoes that of the community around it. Finally, hear from our fellows about their latest deep dive into Toledo's struggle with homelessness as they discuss what a city's affordability means to its communities. If you enjoy this program, be sure to listen to other episodes and check us out at midstory.org or on our socials. It's no secret that post-industrial cities like Toledo are struggling with depopulation. What are the reasons people leave? And what would convince them to stay? To answer these questions, we interviewed dozens of Toledoans, people who've left, people who've stayed, and everyone in between. Today, we're bringing you the next episode of Brain Drain, a new series from the team at MidStory. It's a podcast 7 years in the making, and at the core of why we came home. Episode 6 of the podcast looks at some of the efforts to stem brain drain in Toledo and tackles the thorny question of how to kickstart the city's economic engine. Learn more about this podcast, explore data visuals, and tune in to future episodes at www.midstory.org/braindrain.
Yes, that was MASH's beloved Corporal Klinger, played by Toledo native Jamie Farr. Like the actor that played him, Klinger's character was a proud Toledoan. The role and the TV show gave the city a sliver of the national spotlight during the 70s and 80s, an era when Toledo's reputation had already begun to slip. In this scene, Lieutenant Colonel Sherman Potter is going to ask him to make a sacrifice for the good of the entire troop.
With both lips. Step over here, I want to talk to you.
Klinger famously kept an audacious wardrobe, and Potter wants him to trade it all away to some local women so that the army can convert their home into a hospital.
Klinger, I'm the first to say you're a fine medic and a snappy dresser. I try, sir. They'll give us the building for the clothes.
What? I got 300 clams invested in those dresses.
We've got to have an OR.
But my blue chiffon is from Murdoch's of Toledo.
In the end, Potter knows exactly what to say to get Klinger to give up his clothes.
Cowboy, do it for your country.
My country?
Do it for Toledo.
Toledo.
Okay, Colonel.
We've spent most of this season exploring some of the things that have led people away from Toledo. The lack of a vibrant social scene downtown, the pitfalls of a post-industrial economy, and the appeal of more established cultural scenes in other cities have all caused young adults to pack their bags. But this week, we're going to spend time with some of Toledo's clingers. Their perspective is still shaped by the exodus unfolding around them, but that awareness only strengthens their resolve. It makes them want to dig deeper, to keep insisting on Toledo's promise, and to encourage their friends and neighbors to work harder on behalf of this city. How long can Toledo keep counting on its biggest advocates to swim upstream? Welcome to Brain Drain, a mid-story production that presents an average American city through the eyes of the people who've left it behind. I'm Yannick Schaller. Episode 6, I am going to live through this, even if it kills me. Sylvania native Riley Runnels thought she was never coming back home after college.
I was always the kid that said, you know, I'm getting out of Toledo as fast as possible. I'm never coming back. The second I leave for college, I'm gone.
But after graduation, she did come back. And 3 years later, she's still here. She hasn't just stayed in Toledo. She's working to create reasons for other people to stay. She's almost a year into working as the program manager for Epic Toledo, an organization that supports young professionals with networking and development events. Riley credits Toledo for much of Epic's success.
Epic stands for engaging people, inspiring change. But we really are trying to also showcase that Toledo in and of itself is a really epic place to be. Like, it's just, it's so dynamic. It's ever-changing. It's always exciting.
Dynamic, ever-changing, exciting. All buzzwords that Toledo wants to be associated with. That's how Riley describes her hometown. But it's possible it takes a very particular set of eyes to see it that way. For people who aren't from around here, it isn't exactly love at first sight. Meet Desiree, another one of Midstory's summer interns, who had exactly 2 months to get to know Toledo.
My name is Desiree Luo. I am a sophomore at Northwestern University studying journalism. I'm originally from the Bay Area, and my first impression of Toledo was that it's a pretty big city, but with a small town feel.
People usually use that as like a positive characteristic for Toledo. Did that feel like a positive attribute for you, that impression? Did it seem like a nice thing to be a big town that felt like a small town?
I think there were positives and negatives to it. The biggest positive that everyone I met would tell me was that everyone in Toledo knows everyone, pretty much. And you can really feel that energy when you're interacting with people in the city. Just the way that they approach you with the intention of getting to know you more, the intention of helping you want to learn more about Toledo, I think is not something that you would find in every city.
I think Desiree is hitting on something really important here. Intimacy, familiarity, and warmth are certainly green flags for any relationship. In this case, there's something for a city to build on.
What we find is that if you create a network in a community, it's harder for you to leave.
Meet Jeff Schaff. He's the Vice President of Talent, Strategy, and Signature Events for the Toledo Chamber of Commerce. Jeff's position allows him to see brain drain in a very specific light.
It's like basic business, right? It's easier to keep a customer than find a new one. And so we need to make sure that we're educating those customers on what the region has to offer.
Like Riley, Jeff grew up in Sylvania. He then attended the University of Toledo and has spent his entire career working in and around the city. He also helped get Epic Toledo started back in 2007.
We never fault anyone for looking outside of our community and maybe developing their skills somewhere else and thinking of potentially coming back. But what we've kind of found over the years is that there is a group that just doesn't understand what we have to offer here in Northwest Ohio in the Toledo region. And so a big element of what we're trying to do is communicate that and tell our story so that it doesn't always seem like the grass is greener somewhere else.
That message has resonated with young professionals like Riley, who have chosen to stay in Toledo instead of searching for greener grass elsewhere. To Jeff, it takes a certain caliber of person to make that commitment.
I think if you're looking for that next generation of leaders, they're here and they're ready to do what needs to be done. The whole reason that I joined Epic Toledo as a young professional in my mid to late 20s was because I wanted to show that the brains were still staying here in the community. When you talk about brain drain and you talk about a pocket of individuals who are leaving, it kind of makes the people who decided to stay here and put down roots in the community feel a little bad. Like maybe only the dumb people are staying here. And we wanted to showcase that that was not the truth, that there is a lot of great talent here.
Toledo native Ellen Zubek participated in Epic before her senior year of college at DePaul University. She was a video and photography intern for the Toledo Regional Chamber of Commerce.
As the intern, I was going to all of those events. You know, I was like I was not even 21 yet, and I was going to like all of these like young professional networking events. So I kind of like just got to see what that was like. And I was like kind of like, "Oh, like you can actually like live here as a young adult."
Ellen knew she didn't want to chase Hollywood like her peers, and she enjoyed the program enough to move back to Toledo after her lease in Chicago expired. At the time, Toledo seemed like the perfect place to kickstart a freelancing career.
Toledo is still a big city, but it's a small enough artistic community that I was able to like make an impact pretty early on in my career, which is like hard to do in bigger cities. And it was just because I was like excited to do it because I already had a lot of connections there because I grew up there. But I also had like an interest in it, like in a way that I think that not a lot of people do because I had that window cracked, you know, like I was like, I had like this love for a lot of the like the grittiness of it. I felt a little less judged and I felt a little less like terrified because I had a good community who like lifted me up.
That kind of organic community also drew Riley to the city. For her, it's easy to establish roots in Toledo because there's enough room to do so. That's not necessarily true for larger cities.
You are kind of the small fish in the big pond there. Whereas when you're here in Toledo, we're a mid-sized city, so it's not like we're as big as places like New York or LA. But we have a really great city atmosphere while also having that charming neighborhood feel of you might see people you know when you're out and you might not. But at the end of the day, for all of the people who are dreamers and who want to, you know, leave their mark on a place, I think Toledo is the best place that you can do that because there's opportunity here for you to build your own thing, for you to contribute positively to a community.
Ellen found those opportunities. She spent 7 years filming weddings and working for the Toledo Park District. During that time, she also freelanced for local companies. She even made music videos for local band Oliver Hazard.
Sing, get into the ocean.
Ellen was pursuing her creative passion while living comfortably, which isn't possible everywhere. But sometimes comfort isn't enough.
I kind of feel like I just personally outgrew what I had come to do, if that makes sense. Like, it wasn't like I outgrew Toledo because I think I can see myself living in Toledo again. So, like, it's not like I have given up on Toledo. but just for, like, the time and place of my life, I had outgrown it. Like what I needed something different.
And so, like many other Toledo natives, she moved away last year.
I think I could have been happy in Toledo with a full-time job. I think the reasons I chose to move don't relate to that. I think that one thing that I think that Toledo struggles in is just like moving forward in a fast-paced way.
It's not that people aren't trying. Young people like Riley are trying. Early career professionals like Ellen are trying. Programs like Epic are trying. But from an economic development perspective, maybe Toledo's current efforts to retain young people just aren't cutting it.
If you don't see a plan from the leadership in this area within the next 6 months that's defensible, you could probably start packing your bags. Don't buy any plane tickets, but you could probably start thinking about packing your bags, and it would be a safe bet to say, hey, maybe somewhere else has a vision for me. I think that's a very, very logical timeline.
Darren Moore is the CEO of a global logistics company and is a councilman for the Toledo suburb of Ottawa Hills. He moved to Toledo nearly a decade ago to be closer to family. His wife has ties to a local company, and it just made sense. Their move, he wrote in a recent op-ed in the Toledo Blade, was a deliberate bet on Toledo's future. But he also said that bet has become increasingly difficult to justify.
And I looked back and I said, holy crap, this place is actually possibly worse off than when I got here in 2018. And as parents, and as just people, human beings, there is a cost that you take to choose a specific location or not. And I started to think to myself, like, hey, I've seen nearly a decade now. We're not going to where we need to be. All this capital, all this money that came in, we're not sure where it landed. And I'm watching other places that I work develop even faster. You know, in Africa, in Latin America, in Europe, these places are developing, and Toledo's in the same spot.
The more Darren's gotten involved in Toledo's economic landscape, the more he's found cause for concern.
We're coming off a decade of massive spending in our city, and nobody knows where it went. I mean, you can see the projects, but what I mean, nobody knows where it went from a jobs creation, from an increase in household income. Nobody knows where it went from a population growth standpoint. It went into bricks and mortar, but what did that do? There's been so much cash that's gone into it. But if you walk down there, there's no flywheel. There's no momentum. There's no organic activity. And we're celebrating things like gas stations opening and new restaurants, which, again, these are great amenities, but they are not core economic drivers that are anyway going to get us back close to where we were in the 1970s, which it could be really fast if we started to pivot. But we're continuing to use the same strategy moving forward. Yeah, I mean, think of it this way. We're from the automotive background. So we have all, you know, we have great new wheels on the car, right? We've got a new paint job called the Metro Parks. We've got great, you know, brand new sound system in there. Call that the arts. But our engine is like a 40-year-old engine. And we keep saying to ourselves, well, but look how nice the car looks. Look how, hey, we've opened some stuff along the water. Like, that's not where we need to be focusing. We need to be focusing on the economic engine of Toledo, which is wildly aged out.
Darren's right. Toledo's engine is sputtering. So let's pop the hood. Toledo lags behind the rest of Ohio and the country in a range of economic metrics. Unemployment for the metropolitan area has been between 5% and 6% since the pandemic, consistently higher than the national rate. Nearly 1 in 4 Toledoans live below the poverty line, more than double the statewide rate, and household income is more than 30% lower than the Ohio median. When it comes to educational attainment, more than a third of the U.S. holds a bachelor's degree, but only 1 in 5 Toledoans do. These numbers haven't improved, even after a decade of heavy investment in what Darren called brick-and-mortar upgrades. Today, there are 7,000 fewer workers employed in the Toledo metropolitan area than there were in 2015. In a recent ranking of the 100 largest metropolitan areas in the country by the growth of their millennial populations, Toledo came in 97th.
We have to stop thinking that what we've been doing is going to lead to transformational change. It won't. It's what you've been doing.
Darren says that it's time for a change in strategy. First, he's calling on the city's political leaders to focus on boosting median household income and lowering the poverty rate.
I think we start there. Let's just attack those two problems, and I think everything else will probably fall in line behind it.
But Darren's vision goes further. Like Adam Levine, the director of the Toledo Museum of Art, who we heard from back in episode 4, Darren believes that Toledo needs to develop more of an appetite for risk capital. That is, newer businesses that have received multiple rounds of funding and are poised for rapid growth.
Look at the companies that are getting their B rounds, getting their C rounds, and go talk to them and say, hey, we know you're about to go on a growth rip. Why don't you do that growth rip in our region? If I was City Hall, if I was in charge of that, I would say, how do we capture growth stage companies that are well-funded, well-heeled, and they're looking to expand at a low cost? How do we bring them to us? That'll also solve your young person problem, because young people don't go to mature industries. They love to go to the young industries that are young and exciting. They have to see a plan. And that plan, by the way, this is super important. That plan cannot just be attractive to us here, right? Inside our little bubble. No, that plan has to be exciting on a national scale, on an international scale, right? How do people say, holy smokes, I got to get into Toledo fast?
We've learned a lot about Toledo and Toledoans while producing this podcast, but one thing that has stood out is how fiercely loyal most Toledoans are, even the ones who've chosen to leave. But maybe that loyalty has also created a sort of blind spot.
I think the loyalty on the negative side of it has been used to condition Toledoans to celebrate things that, quite frankly, are not successes. They're non-factors. It's non-news. An Amazon distribution center is like everywhere. That's not a win. Data centers, same thing. These aren't wins. These are just normal things the rest of the country is going through. It's if Toledo happens to pop, right? If it happens to get off the launch pad, which it's positioned to, you stand to make a lot of gain financially, socially, socioeconomically. And so the Toledo loyalty can actually pay off in dividends if something happens. Now, if something doesn't happen and we continue to basically maintain status quo, you know, the question will be like, should I have should I have pulled out and gone to another location? You know, it's hard to say what the time is, but it's also interesting to see that second and third tier size cities like ours have gotten off the launch pad, like Grand Rapids.
It might be a bruise to Toledo's ego to be ranked below Grand Rapids, Michigan, but there's some truth there. At least there was for Ellen, who felt that she had grown out of what Toledo had to offer. She moved, you guessed it, to Grand Rapids.
Like, I don't know how to word this, but like, something that I really liked about Grand Rapids is that it feels like Toledo, but there's just like more to, like there's, it's more tight knit. Like the community feels literally physically like all the neighborhoods are like closer together, and like the downtown, you can walk more easily in Grand Rapids. You can bike. The public transportation is a little bit better. Like there are just things that I think in Toledo that we're just a little bit behind, or like things we used to have that kind of have broken down a little bit. And like there are communities that are struggling in Toledo, and it's really spread out. And so as somebody who is like nearing 30, I was like, I'm still young, and I think I need more vibrancy in my life. And it hurts me to say that because I love Toledo, and I don't think Toledo is not vibrant. I think Toledo is vibrant. But I think that there was just, I just was seeking a little bit more.
Ellen is now the photographer and videographer for the Kendall College of Art and Design at Ferris State University. She hasn't written off coming back to Toledo in the future. She has lots of love for her hometown's warm and supportive community, but still, she left. And she finds that unsettling.
This is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart, because I, when I lived in Toledo, was such a champion for Toledo. So I almost feel like a fraud that I moved, you know, like I feel like a fraud for like leaving and not like fulfilling that like Toledo hero. But I still love Toledo, and I still have like hope for all good things in Toledo and come back all the time.
Love for Toledo may not always be enough to keep people in town, but Riley says this city has more to offer than people think.
If the reason that you're leaving Toledo is because you don't think there's enough opportunity here for you, then you are not looking. And I can firmly say that. I mean, any industry you could think of, we have opportunity here for that. And it is my biggest pet peeve when people tell me that there is no opportunity in Toledo, because there is a wealth of opportunity, both professionally, personally.
Not everyone might agree with Riley, or they might not be willing to put in that extra bit of effort, that second, third, even fourth look to uncover Toledo's potential. Why invest extra when other cities have ready-made opportunities laid on the table, when there are other places that are more ready to receive you as you are?
Corporal Klinger, that's the finest act of bravery I've ever witnessed.
Klinger never makes it back to Toledo. In the series finale of MASH, he falls in love and decides to stay in Korea after the war. The ending of Ellen's story hasn't been written yet. Like Klinger, she's kept Toledo in her heart even after leaving the city behind. Ellen hopes that one day she'll have a good enough reason to return. It's tempting to ask people like Ellen to do it for Toledo. That line might work for some, for a while, but it won't work for everyone, and it won't work forever. Brain Drain is a mid-story podcast written and hosted by Dea Kukeli and by me, Yannick Schaller. Additional reporting on this episode by Desiree Lua and Anavi Prakash. Our editors are Logan Sander and Samuel Chang. Sound design and engineering on this episode is by Samuel Chang. Original artwork for the series by Ruth Cheng and Joshua Rep. Data analysis by Tsai Sa Tsui, Anna Diasio, and Yitong Jiang. Fact-checking by Terry Brisky. Special thanks go to our lovely team of interns who called Toledo home for, at least, a summer. Anavi Prakash, Yasu Shinazaki, Rajan Carson, Martin Barreto, and Desiree Lua. For more information, research, and reading material, please check out the show notes for this episode, available at midstory.org/braindrain. If our reporting has struck a chord or a nerve, we want to hear from you. Reach us on social media or via email at braindrain@midstory.org. Thanks for listening.
Enjoyed this podcast episode? Brain Drain and the many stories produced by MidStory are made possible in part by listeners like you. To support Midwest Stories and help us uplift our home, check us out at midstory.org or on our socials.
The MidStory Hour is a weekly radio show by MidStory, where we connect regional stories to national dialogues and feature behind-the-story conversations with MidStory's writers from across the nation. Tune in to WGTE on FM 91 every Saturday at 10 a.m. and find the podcast online at midstory.org/themidstoryhour and wgte.org/themidstoryhour or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you're just joining us now, you're currently listening to The MidStory Hour. Tune in every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. to hear hidden stories from Toledo, the Midwest, and beyond. You can also find this podcast on midstory.org/themidstoryhour or wgte.org/themidstoryhour or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's next story is part of Withstanding, a mini-documentary series and exhibition featuring six adaptive reuse projects from across Ohio. From bustling North Columbus to quiet Kings Mills, from Northeast Ohio's Cleveland and Oberlin to the glass capital of the world, Toledo, join us as we uncover stories of Ohioans' creativity and innovation. These sites, ranging from schools to warehouses to factories, reflect how our past has been shaped by the forces of industry, migration, education, and more. And their transformation shows how Ohioans are reimagining the future of our state's built heritage. In 2022, Magnet, a Cleveland-based manufacturing nonprofit, opened the doors to its brand new headquarters. But the new space is actually quite old. It was formerly an elementary school that once served the students of Huff, a neighborhood that has faced decades of economic decline due to redlining and segregation. Now, this once defunct building has been transformed into a collaborative educational space, reinvigorating the community it sits within. Here's that story.
Estimates show that as many as 3.8 million manufacturing jobs could open up in the U.S. within the next decade, and that nearly 2 million could be left unfilled. It's shocking, I know, especially since manufacturing's been on the decline for decades because of automation, globalization, and economic instability. But that landscape is changing as technology advances at a pace never seen before, and it will really need a workforce to support it.
I want everyone who walks in the doors to feel like manufacturing is alive and well, and that they could have a place in it, that it is a welcoming environment, it is a positive space, regardless of someone's background. Built in the 1960s, it was an elementary school for many years. At some point, it went into disuse as the population in Cleveland declined and it was not needed any longer. It had a few other incarnations and then it was closed down.
Thousands of students have walked through the doors of 1800 East 63rd Street in Cleveland. Originally Margaret A. Ireland Elementary School, it humbly served the children of the Huff neighborhood, an urban community with a deep history.
When we moved into this neighborhood, it was in line, I'll say, with what we call urban pioneers to try and build it up and boost it back up since the experiences that had happened in the 60s during the uprising. A lot of houses, a lot of businesses had been destroyed. So we sort of became a part of that movement to bring Huff back.
Decades of urban renewal, segregation, and disinvestment culminated in a week-long riot and protest in 1966, now known as the Huff Uprising. In 1960, the neighborhood was home to 70,000 residents. By 2000, the neighborhood's population had dropped to fewer than 20,000.
We are the connection point around Midtown, and so that was the next logical space to try and revive. The interesting thing about that is it is flanked by some of the most diverse and poorest neighborhoods and most left out of the economy because of redlining neighborhoods in the entire state.
When I first moved here, it was kind of rough. I had to put up a fence and block off my property and stuff like that. But I always say that positively light outshined the darkness. And as we did things, as a community came together, that kind of pushed away a lot of that type of negative traffic. Now we got people that want to come down here.
There's this beautiful opportunity of saying, how do we do innovation inclusively? How do we build this neighborhood up, not by pushing people out, but actually by pulling them in?
The nonprofit MAGNET, which stands for Manufacturing Advocacy and Growth Network, took over the school building in 2020.
Because it was built like a bunker, every single classroom wall was a weight-bearing wall. So they had to do crazy things, which they had never done. But at one point, they had steel beams that they were holding up with expanders from the floor, literally holding the ceiling as they knocked down walls to be able to then put the steel beams up to support it because we knocked down all those weight-bearing walls.
By opening it up and then allowing not only the exterior to see in and be able to see out from the space, but also see the other interior spaces looking down and having it be porous, it allows people to engage in the excitement of the facility. You know, you've got a client up here that's meeting with them and they got students walking around.
Open to the public in 2022, the building that once educated generations of elementary students is now an incubator for a new and much more high-tech era of manufacturing, complete with advanced 3D printers and even a robot soda waiter.
When I first came here last year, I was like, eh, until like I really started coming here almost every day of the week, and then it like hit me like, okay, I can really like, if I put my mind to it, I can do it, and that's what I'm doing.
The first time I heard about MAGNET was 2022. I heard they was building this place down here and I heard we was gonna visit it in school. And then after we visited, I just started coming down here a lot, play basketball and build things.
My cousin, he's been in the welding industry for almost 22 years. So he would be very proud of me if I was to get like in the manufacturing business. And that's what I wanna do. So I can make not only him, but my parents proud.
When you can reuse a piece of architecture and turn it into something welcomed by the community and something that kind of builds off of the success of its rebirth, I think that is a tremendous asset, not only to the client, but to the community it's in.
We need to be a beacon of hope. We need to be a beacon of manufacturing being alive and thriving so that folks can see it from the outside. When it's dark, we leave the shades up, we leave the lights on, everybody can see a manufacturing facility. And also we can point and say, your future workforce is sitting right outside.
This story was adapted for audio from one of our documentaries. If you'd like to watch the video version of this piece, as well as the documentaries for the other 5 sites featured in this project, visit midstory.org/with-standing. Withstanding is funded in part by the America 250 Ohio Commission and the Ohio Arts Council. This project is also supported in part by the Arts Commission and the City of Toledo and Lucas County.
The Midstory Hour is a weekly radio show by Midstory, where we connect regional stories to national dialogues and feature behind-the-story conversations with Midstory's writers from across the nation. Tune in to WGTE on FM 91 every Saturday at 10 a.m. and find the podcast online at midstory.org/themidstoryhour and wgte.org/themidstoryhour or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you're just joining us now, you're currently listening to The Midstory Hour. Tune in every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. to hear hidden stories from Toledo, the Midwest, and beyond. You can also find this podcast on midstory.org/themidstoryhour or wgte.org/themidstoryhour or wherever you get your podcasts. In the last few years, Toledo has drawn attention as a growing housing market. However, the amount of unhoused people has doubled in that same time frame. These seemingly opposite effects are the result of external real estate investments that have driven up the cost of living, making housing less accessible despite being more abundant than ever. This lack of access to affordable housing has contributed to the growing homelessness crisis in Toledo, overwhelming the existing social programs. Here is reporter Yannick Schaller with more.
So this is a piece that I'm very near and dear to. I actually started reporting on this all the way back in January of 2025, and it focuses on the sort of cruel irony of being home insecure in a city that is known to be the most affordable city in America.
So this was definitely a labor of love. What started the motivation on wanting to write this piece?
Yeah, this is, it's interesting. This is actually my first kind of print, quote unquote, print story for Midstory. I had previously been reporting mainly in audio and mostly focusing on public transit development across the Midwest. And I had a lot of fun working on those episodes of In Transit. You should absolutely go check out that series on our website. But I knew that I wanted to both try working and try reporting in for a different medium. And I also wanted to find a project that would be more closely focused and rooted in Toledo, in this city. I pitched a piece at the end of 2024, it was, all about the same cafe, which no longer exists, at least not in its original form. But it was a unique dining establishment that was located in the main branch of the Toledo Lucas County Public Library downtown. And SAME actually stands for So All May Eat. So instead of needing to pay for your food at the cafe, you certainly could, but you could also either donate food or volunteer your time. Work a shift, as it were, mm-hmm. at the cafe. I just thought it was a really unique initiative, and it was very specifically oriented towards a portion of Toledo's population that is food insecure. But in the process of reporting on the story, Same Cafe actually closed its doors in April, I believe, of 2025. So I was forced to pivot a little bit. But some of my conversations for the piece had involved members of the kind of advocacy community within the city for the unhoused population. I spoke with Julie Embry, who's the director of the Toledo Lucas County Homelessness Board, and she was concerned. She had some trepidations about the kind of long-term direction care for the unhoused population in this community, largely because a lot of federal funding and support had begun to get cut under the new administration. as I kind of had these conversations with members of her team, I realized that in a place where housing is kind of marketed heavily as a very enticing and important asset for the community, the fact that somebody who's responsible for providing care for the unhoused population in the city can be so concerned, so distressed about her position and about the kind of long-term outlook for housing in the community, it was a really interesting kind of juxtaposition. And so that's kind of the jumping off point that I used for the story.
Okay, so why is Toledo considered such a hot housing market?
Yeah, a great question. There's a couple of key reasons. One is that it is still relatively affordable to find housing here, whether you're looking to own property or rent property. The cost of living in a place like Northwest Ohio and a place like Toledo is much lower than it is in the rest of the country. There's also another factor here, which kind of does speak to the hot element of it. Mm-hmm. This is a place that attracts a lot of speculation, a lot of investment, both from inside the community and outside the community into the housing market, precisely because it is inexpensive. And that's really what we're seeing take place in Toledo, is the kind of conversion of what could have been considered a unique asset, affordability, into a business opportunity. In the last 10 years or so, rent has really skyrocketed. From October of 2022 to September of 2025, the average rent in Lucas County increased by about 40%. So just about 3 years, or just under 3 years, 40% increase. In the Wow. 7 years before then, it had only risen by about 20%. And then you begin to think about how that increase is actually having an effect on the community itself. In 2024, the number of unhoused, or people who lacked adequate housing, I should say, in Toledo and Lucas County was in the 500s. I think it was 524 or so. In just a year after that, the 2025 PIC count, that number had shot up to over 1,000.
Can you tell us about some of the organizations that are helping this population, and what did you discover about their effectiveness?
Yeah, so Toledo actually, and Lucas County, has a long history of providing immediate relief and quite generous relief to folks who are experiencing homelessness. There are a number of missions and shelters and food pantries throughout the city that form a kind of tight fabric, I'd say, of relief and care. Just to shout out a few, I already spoke about the Toledo Lucas County Homelessness Board. They kind of act as an overarching scaffolding, kind of infrastructure, connective tissue for all the sorts of the people who are involved in housing advocacy in the city. But there are also a number of specific, like, direct relief organizations. One that comes to mind is Cherry Street Mission, and they run a number of different shelters throughout the community. But in those conversations, I was kind of asking questions about how their work was changing in light of the, you know, rapid increase in the cost of rent and the recent increase in the size of the unhoused population. And it was a pretty shocking kind of perspective to gain, just hearing that these shelters, which had been operating without too much strain for decades now, within the space of the last couple of years, multiple locations within Cherry Street's organization have been operating at capacity for extended periods of time. Again, this is something that's never happened before, and that's simply because the demand is so high now. So in response to that, the only way to kind of free up some space and to relieve that demand for immediate care is to begin providing more long-term, more sustainable avenues towards home security. And what Cherry Street has done is begun developing some extracurricular and educational resources for their population. People can now work with Cherry Street to get certificates, just trying to add to their arsenal, as it were, to kind of make them more employable, to help them find a way to be self-sufficient. But the other kind of real important asset in this kind of process, in coping with increased strain on the system of care, is to also provide more accessible housing. Public housing is usually maintained by the local public housing authority. In this case, it's Lucas Metropolitan Housing Authority, LMHA. And those are cost-controlled, rent-controlled units that are available for people who meet specific thresholds. The issue is that the supply of public housing in Toledo is really, really scarce, and mm-hmm. it's only becoming more scarce. There are a number of facilities throughout the county whose contracts are set to expire, and the waiting list for access to public housing is several years long at this rate. I believe when I reported on the story back in the summer of last year, people had to wait up to 5 years consistently to get off that waiting list, which of course is far too long for somebody who might need housing immediately. The other alternative to public housing is something that is called Section 8 or Housing Choice Vouchers. This is a federal program that creates public housing-like conditions in the private market. Essentially, it gives vulnerable and low-income renters vouchers that offset the cost of rent on the private market. But the number of vouchers that are available, that are offered through, again, the Public Housing Authority, those are dictated by the budget of these public housing authorities. And you can imagine, as the cost of rent in a place like Toledo begins to increase, the difference between what a working family is able to pay for their monthly rent and what the cost of rent on the private market is will only continue to widen. And that means that the cost of every voucher to the public housing authority increases as well. So multiple times over the last several years, the Lucas Metropolitan Housing Authority has actually been unable to issue any new vouchers. It's sat at zero. That, again, kind of ties back to this hot and lucrative and profitable housing market. It's all well and good to attract investment, but that investment has spurred such rapid increases in the cost of rent that it's making it harder for people, for everyday people, everyday Toledoans, to find the housing that they need and to use the federally mandated resources that are supposed to be available to them.
Well, it sounds like we're not in the greatest spot, but if anyone listening to this wants to help, what could they do?
I mentioned that the immediate relief that organizations like Cherry Street are offering they're still valuable. They're still absolutely important in this effort. So if you do want to donate food or clothing, or if you want to volunteer with Cherry Street Mission, if you're in Toledo, that's a great place to start. In speaking with Julie Embry, who again is the director of the Toledo Lucas County Homelessness Board, she called on people to be vocal, to ask their local elected officials about what public housing inventory looked like and what prospects there were for increasing affordable housing in your community. You might also be interested in speaking to city councilors if you're in Toledo as well to ask about upcoming projects. These housing advocates consistently stress to me that there's only so much that can be done in the kind of realm of immediate care. The shelter system and food and clothing donations are, again, important, but they're only going to go so far as these conditions continue to worsen, as rent continues to climb, and as the supply of public housing and rent-controlled housing continues to decrease or even remain static. What needs to shift in order to kind of address the longer-term outlook on home insecurity in a place like Toledo is structural change, is more funding for the public housing authorities, is the development of more affordable housing and public housing in this county. One thing I also might add is that this seems pretty bleak, but I think it's important to note that Toledo and Lucas County had actually been doing a really commendable job of providing for their unhoused population and keeping the size of that unhoused population relatively low for decades, and from the early 2000s up until the 2020s or so. It's not impossible to get back to that. But again, the conditions that we have now with a hot housing market here in Toledo and with a scarcity of opportunity, a scarcity of resources to offset the speculation and the increases in rent, it's difficult to navigate that return to what was otherwise been a pretty stable and solid normal for this area.
I think that's a great note to end on, that even though it may look bleak, hope is within reach. And thanks for your reporting, Yannick.
Absolutely. Thanks, Evan.
Thanks for listening to the Midstory Hour. We have a full lineup for our next episode, so tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. to hear more about Midstory, our home in our greater region. If you have a story you'd like to share or just would like to drop us a note, please contact us at contact@midstory.org. Midstory Hour is a Midstory podcast produced in collaboration with WGTE. It features original work produced by our dedicated team of reporters, researchers, data analysts, and creators. This episode was hosted by Samuel Chang, edited by Evan Blanco, and written by Logan Sander, Ruth Chang, and Samuel Chang. Artwork is by Ruth Chang and Joshua Rep. This week's episode features stories by the Greater Midstory team, including Dea Kukeli, Yannick Schaller, Celia Johnson, and Yaffa Siegel. Midstory is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to progressing the Midwest narrative through multimedia storytelling, solutions-oriented research, and community programming. Founded in 2018 by four individuals who found their way home from the East Coast to Toledo, Ohio, Midstory re-envisions the Midwest story toward a productive, bright, and influential future. Learn more at www.midstory.org.
The Midstory Hour is a weekly radio show by Midstory, where we connect regional stories to national dialogues and feature behind-the-story conversations with Midstory's writers from across the nation. Tune in to WGTE on FM 91 every Saturday at 10 a.m. and find the podcast online at midstory.org/themidstoryhour and wgte.org/themidstoryhour or wherever you listen to podcasts.